Welcome to Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show, your place for a detailed analysis of each episode of Star Trek Discovery. Now here are your hosts, Sean Ray and Rick Tatro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the premiere episode of Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show, your place for in-depth discussions for every episode of Star Trek Discovery. My name is Sean Ray, and joining me this evening is my co-host Rick. How are you, sir?
Shouldn't this be the before show right now, anyway?
Yeah, this is the the preview show.
Hi, folks.
And sitting over to my left of the virtual table is my Cosmic Potato co-host, Mr. John Irons. How are you, sir?
This is starting off great.
And as I said, this is our premiere episode, and it's the only one that we have planned that doesn't accompany a specific episode. So Star Trek Discovery is going to come on every Sunday on CBS All Access, and on Mondays we're going
Sunday,
to record
Sunday.
We're going to record our thoughts on what happened in that episode and all that, talk about what happened and review all aspects of it. But I thought, since the show hasn't started yet, it starts this Sunday, we'll record one episode that just kind of discusses the history of what's happened over the past year or so since they announced that this show was going to be a thing, and we'll talk about the characters and what we're hoping we'll get out of it. So we're also going to talk about some of the things that some of the fans are saying. You know, a lot of the fans are not exactly excited about this show, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the reasons why they're not excited. And but have you guys seen any of the stories that came out today about the red carpet premiere from last night?
Saw headlines, haven't had a chance to watch any of them, I'm afraid.
I saw photos. I saw Sonequa Martin-Green next to Nichelle Nichols, both giving the Vulcan salute. That was cool.
Yeah. Everybody that was anybody that's anybody in Star Trek was at this thing. I mean, they had just about every actor that's still living that's been on Star Trek was there. But a lot of the reviews that came out, which, you know, they put a quash on putting out any information about the show. They're not letting reviewers watch it and stuff like that, but they did have this premiere last night, and what came out on Twitter was mostly positive. You know, people are saying things like go out and get CBS All Access right now and watch this on the biggest TV that you can find, you know. That kind of stuff. So that's positive outlook for the show anyway.
Yeah, I know a couple of guys that went, and one of them, you know, of course they were sworn to secrecy. I think everybody there was, you know, and it seems to be that most everybody is cool with, like, I'm not going to spoil this, but, and what I've heard from people is Star Trek is in good hands. And these are people that whose opinion I really trust on this stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to be getting something really good, and it's going to be really different from what we've seen in the past, obviously, because it's been 12 years since Enterprise went off the air. So that was the last TV version of Star Trek that we've had. And TV has come a long way in the last 12 years, you know. So obviously we're going to get something that's a lot more advanced. And that's one of the things that some of the fans are saying that they don't want, because it's not going to look like the original series. I don't want it to really look like the original series, because the original series was made in the 60s. You know, I don't want to watch a TV show that looks like it was made in the 60s. But
well, there was also a convention a couple three weeks ago, where there was a panel that was it was all the art directors and designers from the show.
Yeah.
And the press weren't allowed to. There were no recordings made or anything like that. But they were saying that the intention is, as the show goes on, they are going to skew the design aesthetic so that it leans more towards, like, the colors of TOS.
Mm-hmm.
The intention is for this show to, you know, as much as is feasible, I think, segue or at least set the stage for TOS not being a completely unbelievable next step.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this is set 10 years before, which is roughly about the time that The Cage took place. Am I right about that? Maybe a few years before?
Well, let's see. At the time of, if I'm remembering correctly, at the time of The Menagerie, I think they're saying that Spock had served with Pike for 15 years, or had it been 15 years since? It's right around there,
so
more or less.
I wouldn't be surprised if maybe you see some Cage-esque uniforms on some of the characters. It may be background characters, you know, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see some uniforms that looked kind of like uniforms from The Cage, even in this season, you know.
Well, so. And also, you know, and I'm just spitballing here. I don't have any basis of fact for this, but
yeah, that's most of this is.
Yeah. You know, even in our current military, different branches have different uniforms.
Yeah, yeah,
sure. And different looks. You know, yes, what we've seen of the Discovery and the Shenzhou look more advanced now than what we saw in the Enterprise back in 1966. But that doesn't mean that. You know, I've seen, you know, they've seen the picture they've seen. They've shown us the pictures of a lot of the props, and the props are gorgeous. The phasers are a wonderful transition between Cage era phasers and modern or TOS era phasers. Same with tricorders and communicators and stuff like that. I hope we see the occasional like gooseneck microphone thing coming out of a command chair.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Let's go back to when we first found out that this show was going to happen. It was November of 2015, and CBS announced that they were developing a new series set in the Star Trek universe that would be released in January of 2017. Now, as we know, they didn't make that deadline. They pushed it back twice, and at that point in time, we had very little information about the show. We didn't know if it was going to be set in the Prime universe or the Kelvin timeline. For those of you that don't know, which I'm sure if you listen to this show, you know this, but the Prime Universe refers to anything that happened in the original five shows and the movies, and the Kelvin Universe is anything that happened in the J.J. Abrams universe, the 2009 film and Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond and all that. So right around that same time, late in 2015, Paramount and CBS also launched a lawsuit aimed at the producers of Axanar, the Axanar fan production. Do you think that the lawsuit and this new series had anything to do with each other?
Nope.
Not at all. You don't think so?
I think probably not.
I followed the Axanar debacle very closely. I think that without going into too much detail, just because it's a rabbit hole I'm really sick of being in.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to ignore it now. If you want to find out about what all went on, you can find it ad nauseum online. There are plenty of people who will talk to you about what happened on Axanar on both sides of the coin. But anyway, the bottom line is the people producing Axanar were going way above and beyond what is proper and what is legal as far as creating a Star Trek fan production.
Right.
And they would have attracted the attention of CBS and their lawyers, whether CBS was getting ready to do another show or not, despite what the devotees of, the people that are still dedicated to Axanar for some reason, you know, they are absolutely sure that this was a witch hunt because they were creating something that was going to compete with what CBS is doing. And this incredibly inflated sense of self-importance that these people have. You know, I love Star Trek Continues, which is, you know, Vic Mignogna's outfit.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a fantastic job of doing what is essentially the fourth season of TOS. And they have played by the book. They have, you know, they've raised money, but they've used every penny of it to do the show. They have a very dedicated following, of which I am one of them. But when it comes right down to it, there are, I'll be generous and say, you know, a few thousand people, maybe even tens of thousands of people who watch Star Trek fan shows and watch Star Trek Continues in general. That is such a, and you know, for Axanar, it's even less now because of all of the net. So these fans who think that boycott Discovery because CBS cracked down on Axanar for breaking the law. It's like, it's such a drop in the bucket. They, you know, CBS couldn't care less. If everybody that ever watched a Star Trek fan show didn't watch Discovery, it wouldn't move the Nielsen ratings 1%.
Right. Yeah.
Not that I am a little pissed off about this whole Axanar thing still. That's another reason I don't want to talk about it, because it just gets me.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. But I mean, so the show got pushed back, and slowly over time, we started to learn a little bit more about what we were going to get. First thing we found out was some of the people who were going to be involved in the show. So you've got Heather Caden as an executive producer. She worked on Sleepy Hollow, Scorpion, and Limitless. And Alex Kurtzman was signed on as executive producer. He wrote on Transformers, Amazing Spider-Man 2, The Mummy, the old one, and Hercules, Xena, Jack of All Trades, Alias, and stuff like that. And then they got Brian Fuller, who was named the showrunner, and he created Dead Like Me, Pushing Daisies, Hannibal, and now he's known for American Gods. And Nicholas Meyer, who was hired as a writer and a consulting producer, and of course he directed Star Trek II and Star Trek VI, which are arguably two of the best of those six movies. And of course, Rod Roddenberry, the son of Gene Roddenberry, was also hired as an executive producer. So a lot of things happened over those next few months. And
Didn't Brian Fuller have something to do with Voyager or Enterprise?
Yeah, I think he was a writer. Well, I know he was a producer for several episodes of I know Voyager. I think Deep Space Nine. He had some stuff in Deep Space Nine, yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was on Enterprise too. But
yeah, because I know he had Star Trek experience.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he did. He did definitely.
Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
Okay, so he wasn't on Enterprise. Okay.
Google Foo is faster than mine.
So when they signed him on, he was hired by CBS. They didn't really have an idea of what they wanted. They just knew they wanted to bring Star Trek back to TV. And he wanted to do an anthology series, kind of like what American Horror Story does and Fargo and shows like that, so that each season would be a different crew and it would take place in a different time period, so they'd be able to explore all kinds of different aspects of the show, of the universe. CBS said no, they didn't want to do that. They just want to do a serialized show for now. And he kind of clashed with the guy that was hired to direct the pilot. He wanted Edgar Wright to direct the pilot. And the budget was starting to go over what they wanted to spend. And Fuller was designing new sets and costumes and aliens. And he was also trying to be the showrunner for American Gods at the same time. And eventually he pulled out of Star Trek and went to go do American Gods completely. So what would you guys have thought of an anthology series like he wanted to do?
I find it intriguing. Like, not to get too Spock on you. like, I think I would have almost liked it better instead of, like, you know, one crew per season. Almost just, like, per episode. You know, have maybe, you know, five or six crews on five or six ships or space stations. And, you know, this week we're looking at them, and this week we're looking at them, and this week we're looking at them. And maybe as we get close to the season finale, they start to interact, maybe.
Yeah.
But not even necessarily. I think I would prefer that to a different crew every season. A different crew every season feels to me like it's just long enough to start to care about the characters, and then you don't see them again.
Yeah, there's that.
As opposed to, you know, if everybody gets like a show, you know, I'm not expected to build any kind of particular bond. So it's like, oh, it's almost like Game of Thrones. You know, back when Game of Thrones had, you know, 100 different things going on. It's like, oh, we get to see so-and-so this episode. Oh, we get to see so-and-so this episode. So there's always kind of that sense of anticipation that I think would be a different and welcome feeling for a Star Trek show.
I like the
Mad at the way they're doing it.
I like the idea of the one thing about an anthology series that I think would have been interesting is the fact that you could shift the timeline around. You know, you could do a season that's here before TOS. Well, the next season could take place 10 years after, you know, the Next Generation or after Voyager and all that. So we could visit the universe that we know and maybe bring some of those characters back and do that kind of thing. And then we could do a season that takes place entirely at Starfleet Academy, you know, and that kind of stuff. That's just something that it would have been interesting, I think. Go ahead.
I'll admit that when I first heard the anthology idea floated, I liked the idea. Now, part of it might just be because I kind of miss episodic television.
Yeah.
You know, with TO, you know, right up until DS9 even, but even later than that, you know, growing up for me and for people in my generation, you know, some of y'all too, it used to be that you didn't have to watch a show from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You could come in the middle of a season and be fine. You know, you may have to figure out who some characters are, but for the most part, every episode was a self-contained thing, unless it was a two-parter, and then that would be, you know, a self-contained thing. And now, you know, one of the reasons why I, you know, people are like, oh, have you watched this series? And I'm like, no, because there's four seasons of that thing, and I need to watch all of them to get up to here, and I just don't have that much time.
Yeah.
So I was kind of psyched about the anthology idea. Plus, one of the things I've always said about Star Trek, or when everyone said, you know, anyone asked me, what do you want to see in a future Star Trek? I don't think we need to change the time. You know, we have seen five ships. Well, four ships and a space station. Mm-hmm, okay.
Right.
And they were the ones that, granted, were at the leading edge of the forces that were driving the geopolitics of the galaxy at that time. But there's still the entire Alpha Quadrant and pieces of the Beta Quadrant and to explore. You could do 10 years of essentially short stories, anthologized, is that how? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
Sure.
And never run out of material. You know, they could do a show, you know, one episode where it's a troop transport and a convoy taking stuff to some planet during the Dominion War, and then the next year or the next episode could be something going on, you know, during the TOS era or something on the other side in the Gamma Quadrant that, you know, through the wormhole. There's so much untapped material out there mm-hmm. that I thought an anthology show would be awesome. From a practical standpoint, it's expensive as shit.
That's true. Yeah.
And for an unestablished show, I'm sure that was one of the big problems was they were like, we have to build a new ship every week. We have to hire a new cast every week. You know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, when shows like The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits and you know, stuff like that were huge, each TV studio had a stable of actors that they just went, all right, you're in this week, you're in next week, you're, you know. They don't have that now. Now every episode is a negotiation. And if you're not negotiating for an entire season, the costs just go through the roof in no time. So I can really... As much as I would love to see a show like that, I don't see it being feasible right now. Not for a network.
Yeah.
You know, maybe someone like Netflix could do it, but.
Well, one of the things that I read is that, I mean, of course, they're not doing the anthology. They're doing a series where the entire season is one complete storyline.
Yeah.
But from what I've read, the through line that goes into the next season, like next season, will be a completely different story. So some of the characters that we see here may be gone, and they may bring in new characters, but they're going to have a core few characters. And of course, it being called Star Trek Discovery, I'm sure it'll be on at least the Starship Discovery will have something something to do with the plot. But they also said that they're looking at shows like Game of Thrones and like The Walking Dead, where they're not afraid to kill off what you consider to be main characters and you not expect it. You know, it just happened. You know, so the captain of the ship may get killed halfway through the season. You know, and that's not out of the question.
You know, I think that's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to be halfway. What we know is that Sonequa Martin-Green plays Michael Burnham, who is, I guess, like, first officer to... Or the show starts out, she's first officer to Michelle Yeoh, who plays Captain... Shoujo.
Yeah, she's serving on the on the Shenzhou. Yeah,
right. I have a bad feeling about the immediate future of Captain Shoujo and how. Yeah.
Well, okay. This. I've, IMDb information be considered a spoiler.
Well, I'm looking now, and it says 15 episodes.
Yeah, let me do a disclaimer for this show is a spoiler show. So for future episodes of this podcast, don't listen to this podcast if you haven't seen the episode, because that's what this whole show is about. We're going to be analyzing the plot of every episode. So anything goes. You can spoil whatever you want, because we're warning people. If you care about spoilers, don't listen. If you don't want to be spoiled, then wait until you've seen the show to listen to the episode. So
okay. I'm on the IMDb page, and Michelle Yeoh is listed as being in 15 episodes.
Yeah. Now I didn't go looking for that. I was looking for something else on IMDb, and then I was like, wow, she's in all the episodes. Cause somebody on another Facebook group that I'm part of was saying that they suspected that the Shenzhou would be destroyed in the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And now granted, being in the episode doesn't mean the character's still alive.
Yeah, it could be a flashback.
It could be flashbacks or something. So, but I'm not saying that I think the Shenzhou and her crew are going to make it through the whole thing, but I think that the assumption it's going to be destroyed right away, I think that, excuse me, I think that might be a little premature, because I have seen frequent references to this being a show about two ships.
Yeah. Yeah, and being listed as being on the show doesn't necessarily mean anything anymore either, because like on The Walking Dead, I know some of those actors, they don't know their character is going to be killed until they get the script for that episode. You know.
Yeah.
So they could list her as 15 episodes just because they're paying her for 15 episodes. It's in her contract. But she may get killed in the first one.
Well, I'm kind of, I mean, you know, it's a good news, bad news thing. One of the things that I find most interesting about this this series is that the main character is a human who was raised on Vulcan.
Yeah.
And when Sonequa Martin-Green has talked about it in interviews, she used the word indoctrination. Which is not a positive word.
Not usually.
So,
yeah.
So you know, I get the sense that she, at least she, her character, you know, is fighting against that the Vulcan way, the Vulcan mindset, and excuse me. And that was one of the things that I was really kind of looking forward to when I first heard that, was to, you know, maybe kind of see her journey, her progression as, you know, a very logical person to, you know, letting more of her, you know, emotional human side appear as we see the character develop. But the more I've seen, you know, at this point, I think we've kind of jumped ahead and we've kind of missed that. We, the audience, kind of don't get to see that because she's already done a lot of that. So tying this into what we were saying before, I am kind of hopeful. Well, I don't know about hopeful, but one way that we could still see it is if they do show a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe like she's encountering some conflict or decision or, you know, whatever challenge. And she is thinking back to her time at Vulcan Academy. Is that right?
Yeah.
What's it called? Vulcan Science Academy.
The Science Academy. And, you know, so if this show is flashback heavy, for lack of a better term, then some of that could be, a lot of that could be Michelle Yeoh, if she's the one. And this is something else that I've seen in interviews, where she kind of takes credit for helping her to unlock her human emotional side. So, yeah, so it's good news in that I do want to see that transition, but it's bad news in that it doesn't necessarily... Michelle Yeoh could be dead the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could be sixth-sensing us the whole time.
Now, speaking of Michael growing up on Vulcan, there's also another thing that we might as well talk about the elephant in the room at this point.
Spock.
And it's, just all of the angry nerds out there who have already decided they're going to hate the show.
Oh yeah, I've got a list of things that they've been saying, because
do we really have to talk about them?
if you belong to the Star Trek Universe forum on Facebook, I apologize. I'm the one that's been arguing with you for the last year. I'm going to talk. And I was actually on Facebook today and asked the question, what is it that you guys are not wanting? Are not liking about this show? And I've got a list of a few things that they told me that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But go ahead, what you were saying, Rick.
The thing that's kind of, okay. This was a little bit of a come to Surak moment for me, because one of my gripes against Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, of which the list is long and varied and has grown over the years.
That's the best one.
All right, folks, we'll see you later. I'm done with this show.
The camping in Yellowstone Park, that was great.
Oh, God, shoot me. I used to gripe that all of a sudden, out of the blue, suddenly Spock has a half-brother that we never heard about.
Yeah.
But something occurred to me not too long ago, because people were whining about, oh, Spock has this adopted sister that we've never heard about. And I would just like to remind anyone who's making that argument that if you remember back to Journey to Babel, when we first met Sarek and Amanda, and they came aboard the ship, and Captain Kirk, who is Mr. Spock's best friend in the whole freaking universe, didn't know they were his parents.
Yeah.
Spock doesn't talk about his family. So it is not in any way unbelievable that there could be half-brothers, half-sisters, adopted sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, anybody that Spock knows from Vulcan. Because when's the last time you heard him say anything other than when he was racked with Ponfar?
I want that on a t-shirt, by the way.
Let's talk about some of the things that we do know about the show. So they've cast, we've already said, Sonequa Martin-Green to play the lead role. She was a series regular on The Walking Dead, and AMC wouldn't release her until the end of her contract, which was at this past April. And her character, Sasha, had a brilliant death. She went out like a boss. Yeah. And it caused, but that caused CBS to have to push it back again, because they wanted her and they had to wait. So they pushed it back a little bit. We also know that the first season will be 15 episodes, and it'll be one story that spans the entire first season. It won't be an anthology, and we know that the USS Discovery is named after, of course, the Space Shuttle Discovery, but also Discovery 1 from 2001, A Space Odyssey, and it's set between the events of Star Trek Enterprise and TOS, which are, Enterprise and TOS are roughly 150 years apart, something like that. But it's much closer to the TOS timeline, because they want to use some of those iconic ship and uniform designs. What do you guys think about? So do you remember in the first Abrams movie, which roughly you can say that, of course, that movie takes place in an alternate timeline, but it starts in the prime timeline. And Scotty makes a comment that he got punished because something happened to Admiral Archer's dog or something like that. So you think
it was like a transporter accident or something.
Yeah. So yeah. You think Archer could still be alive in this timeline? I mean, of course,
he totally could.
T'Pol could because she's Vulcan. So
T'Pol definitely could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be interesting to see if they would bring back some of those Enterprise characters, being, you know, 100 plus years later. Let me read. I got a press release here that came from Polygon.com about the show. And it's a couple of paragraphs. Let me read this. Star Trek Discovery will follow the adventures of the crew of the USS Discovery set 10 years before the events of Star Trek, the original series. It will heavily involve the Klingon Empire as the leader called T'Kuvma, if I'm pronouncing that right. He seeks to unite the fractious Klingon houses by provoking a war with the United Federation of Planets. Unlike most Star Trek series before it, Discovery eschews the episodic format to tell a single story. The relationships between characters get richer and deeper. There are surprises, there are turns, there are secret agendas and reveals. And that is quoted from Jason Isaacs, who plays Captain something.
Lorca.
Yeah. And so the first season's arc is going to revolve around an event in Star Trek history that's been talked about but never explored. And, of course, it's the birth of the Federation Klingon Cold War.
Are you sure it's a Cold War?
Well, that's
I think it gets...
Yeah,
that was a shooting war.
Yeah,
it starts
all hot. Yeah, I think I think when it starts, it's a Cold War, and it kind of gets provoked because the Klingons that are in this. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. One of the things that people are hating is the way that the Klingons look in the trailer, but the Klingons, especially the main ones that are part of the story, are not Klingons that we've seen a lot. These are Klingons that are almost like. They've been gone for a long time. They're on a 200-year-old ship that's been out, and they live the old lifestyle. You know, they're kind of like Quakers. Yeah. You know,
that's the thing is the reason these Klingons look the way they do is a major plot point.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I think so. Everyone that's pissing and moaning about what the Klingons look like. First of all, the Klingons have changed with every incarnation of Star Trek.
Yeah,
absolutely. For the most part. And even within incarnations of Star Trek, look at Worf from season one and then compare his makeup and stuff to season seven.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ridges change. Yeah. Or into Deep Space Nine. As long as the story makes sense, I really don't care what the Klingons look like. It was fun in more Trials and Tribulations. When they went back in time to the Trouble with Tribbles and Worf did one of the greatest cop out lines in history of "We do not talk about it," because then we saw in Enterprise that when they finally did decide to address it, it was weak as hell.
Yeah, they give us an explanation that we didn't really need.
Yeah, so you know, as long as there is just something, and we already know it's going to be more than just a little something. But, you know, the fact that this is, you know, a 200-year-old sleeper ship or something, fine. Something else, and I've mentioned this on at least the Starbase and maybe even on the Movie News Show. Something that's always bugged me about the Klingons is that they're the Klingon Empire, and yet we only ever see one species.
Right, yeah.
And we only ever see one planet. Now, if they're an empire, there should be hundreds of planets under the Klingon rule. So why wouldn't there be more than one species of Klingon?
Yeah.
And even on one planet, I mean, you know, you can grab 30 different humans and they look different.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like to me, the way that, I mean, the two big complaints that I've heard, the Klingons don't look right. And, how could he have this sister that nobody knows about? Like, just settle down. Like, but it comes down to this: either you trust that the people making this Star Trek recognize that Star Trek is a big deal, and they're going to, you know, put some effort into. Like, they wouldn't you don't get up to the highest diving board if you don't know what you're doing. You know, if you're, you don't swing for the fences unless you think the, I'm messing up. I don't do sports anyway. you don't slam dunk unless you can do a touchdown.
Yeah.
But not like seriously, like either you trust that these writers recognize that they're going to have to make this make sense, or you don't. So, I mean, I at least give them, it'd be different if, you know, if it wasn't Star Trek and if it wasn't Star Trek people behind it. If it was, you know, just, you know, I don't know, if like the Papa John's mogul decided to buy Star Trek and make a movie and he didn't really care, he just knew that, you know, Star Trek was popular, then yeah, then I might be a little bit worried.
Yeah.
But I mean, you don't have to, but to me it makes sense to just give the benefit of the doubt to, okay, they understand. And again, like you said, it's the first Star Trek series in, you know, over a decade. It's the, no pun intended, it's the flagship of their CBS All Access.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not gonna screw around with it. So if they're telling you that there are these huge changes, that there's these huge shocking things, if Klingons look this way and, you know, Spock's father raised a daughter that nobody ever knew about, you can at least give the benefit of the doubt that they thought, that they recognize that it's a big deal and that they thought about how they're going to explain those things.
Yeah, well, okay, two things. First of all, okay, what you said about Spock's father raising a child that nobody knew about. What actually happens? Well, what happens is that Michael Burnham's parents were ambassadors to Vulcan, and they were on Vulcan when the Klingons attacked and they got killed. So she was raised by Sarek and Amanda. So, I mean, she's actually raised in the same house that Spock was raised in. Of course, he was already grown and gone by that point, I'm sure. And then if I could just make a little bit of a theory about the Klingons. So we have that really weak explanation as to why they didn't have ridges on their foreheads in the original series. And listeners, if you don't remember, in Enterprise, they explained that they contracted some kind of a virus that caused changes to their evolution. So this ship full of Klingons were not there. They never got this virus. They were gone. So they have 200 years more of evolution than what the Klingons that we know have. So these are what Klingons probably would have looked like if that had never happened.
Is this your theory? Or
this is my theory. This is my theory, but okay. But it makes sense, right?
Right.
This is what they'd have looked like if Roddenberry had a budget.
Yeah, true. Because, I mean, you see what the Klingons look like in Star Trek Into Darkness. And, yeah, that was set in an alternate timeline, but that alternate timeline wouldn't change their evolution.
Yeah, and that did bother me. But I'll tell you, Into Darkness had so many problems that the fact that the Klingons looked different was not worth even mentioning. But yeah, there was no valid reason other than, you know, we've got different designers doing it for why the Klingons would look so different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. I try to pretend Into Darkness didn't happen.
Let me take just a few minutes and talk about some of the hatred that this show is getting. So, and surprisingly, a lot of it is coming from Star Trek fans. A lot of the issues that people have with it is the fact that the main thing is that in the United States, the show is behind a paywall. So, of course, we're going to have to talk about that. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But, like I said, I'm on a couple of Star Trek Facebook groups. One of them is Star Trek Universe. And that I went on there this morning and I posted the question, what is it about this show that you guys don't like? Because I'm seeing a lot of hatred for this show and it hasn't even come on yet. So I would just like to know so I can put some bullet points on the podcast that I'm doing tonight, and we can talk about
Sean,
those things. Go ahead.
Before you go on, I just want to congratulate you and applaud you. You have a far stronger stomach than I do. One of the first things I did when I got online back in 1998 was go into a Star Trek chat room.
Yeah.
And I left in about 10 minutes because I just couldn't take the bullshit anymore. So my hat's off to you for taking one for the team.
Well, yeah. And over the last year, and I've gotten into a couple of, I try to stay respectful. I'm not going to go on there and blast people and cuss them out and all that kind of stuff. You know, you've got your opinions. I've got my opinions, whatever. But so one person that responded to me, his name is Steve Immersion. Steve, if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, I apologize. But so one of the things that he doesn't like is that it does not adhere to canon. I'm not reading his.
Oh, Lord.
I'm not reading his his response verbatim because it was very long. I'm just taking some bullet points out of it. But so he says that if you're going to set a show 10 years before Kirk, then it should be a nice homage to the original. You don't have to go back to cheap turtlenecks and handmade props, but make the uniforms look 90% like the originals while giving them a more contemporary look. And we already talked about this some. You know, we're we think it's going to blend more towards that aesthetic as the show progresses. Now, if you look at 2009 Star Trek, that first scene at the Kelvin, you know, that was basically the Prime Universe. You know, that was it had just kind of shifted over because that's when Nero came through and all that kind of stuff. But their uniforms were different than TOS, and it was only set, that was about 25 years before TOS, you know, so their uniforms were kind of in between Enterprise and TOS. So, and if you go back and look at them, they kind of look similar to what we're seeing on Discovery. So
yeah, the jumpsuit kind of look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, like the uniforms look different. That is a non-issue.
Yeah.
Because all it takes is, you know, for, you know, the person in charge of the base to get a letter saying, we're using these uniforms now.
Yep.
And then you change your uniform. That's it. We've got new uniforms now. So that can literally happen, you know, over the course of like a month. So, you know, if you're 10 years ahead and your uniforms don't match that, yeah, that's fine. That makes sense.
My answer to anyone bitching about the uniforms is just do a quick Google search of just U.S. Army uniforms.
Right, yeah.
And exactly. See how many changes have happened since the Army was incepted, okay, let's say 200 years ago, not even 200 years ago. You know, it's like you said, you get some admiral in charge who's like, my brother-in-law has this design for a uniform that I think would be awesome, and we're going to implement it through the entire fleet. And it's there for 5 years. We saw three of them. And then it's gone.
Yeah.
Yep.
The next one that he brings up, he does kind of have a point, but it's not a major issue. I guess for some fans it might be, but he says that there's no reason for the crew to be wearing the Delta shield with an Arrowhead logo, because only the Enterprise crew wore that in TOS. All the other ships had their own, and then by the time TNG came along, it had been adopted as the Starfleet symbol for the entire fleet.
I had been saying that. I was one of the people going, why are they all wearing the Delta?
Yeah.
It turns out that there is a memo. I'm reading. I've read a couple of books about the making of Star Trek. Well, I've read a lot of them, but over the last 2 years, I've read a couple that go into some of the more minutiae. And there is a memo from Bob Justman and memos from Bob Justman and Gene Roddenberry, and also Matt Jeffries. And they're talking about how putting those different insignia on for Omega Glory.
Yeah.
And I think in the Tholian Web, I can't remember if we actually saw it on those uniforms or not. Anyway, it was a mistake. It was never intended to happen. It was one of those things where Bob Justman had meant to send the memo to Bill Tice to have them in the costume department to do it. And somebody else had an idea that each ship would have its own insignia, but it was never approved from up above. And by the time it was done, the episode was shot and they didn't have time to go back and redo it. So that was actually everybody wearing a Delta was intended from the get go. And the what we saw on screen was a mistake. So, all right, if you say that canon is what we saw on screen, then OK, yes, them all wearing Deltas doesn't make sense. However, if you know the history of it, that was actually a goof that's being rectified in this.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing that you have to realize with any TV series that's been around for 50 plus years, there's going to be some retconning that's going to come along. It happens.
Yeah.
You know, and usually they correct things they use time travel to try and justify the retcon without making it just slap you across the face. But I think that's a little bit of what we're getting here, because I don't remember anybody wearing the Delta shield on Enterprise. Do you?
No, they didn't have any insignia on Enterprise. Yeah. They wore patches like Apollo astronauts.
Yeah. So this is a little bit of retcon, and they're probably hoping that nobody's going to notice.
Good luck with that.
But obviously, you know, Star Trek fans zone in on continuity a lot. So yeah, we did notice. But like I said, it's really a non-issue for me, but I can see where some fans that tend to get hung up on stuff like that might raise a little bit of a stink over that. But
Well, and let me clarify something. The fact that I noticed it was not in any way like, oh, well, this show is going to suck because they're wearing Delta shields. I was just like, they really shouldn't have those. But yeah. Oh, well. and then it turns out I was wrong anyway. Yeah. So I'll try to find that.
You weren't wrong. You just didn't have all the information.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll try to find that memo because it's online. I'll try to track it down and I don't know where we would post it.
we've got a Facebook page. We can post it on the Facebook.
Oh, we do.
That's an interesting question. So, I mean, not to get off on a tangent, but like philosophically, once it's filmed and once that film is released to the public, does that make it canon, even if it was a mistake?
Yes.
I would say
technically so. Technically speaking, yes.
Because it's what's on the screen. But like I said, they can go back, they can retcon things, you know. TV series and movies do that all the time. They're going to make a new Halloween movie that's going to totally ignore the fact that Halloween H2O happened. So
okay, if all it takes to erase canon is releasing another film that says it wasn't that way,
yeah.
Then what does canon even mean? Like, why
it doesn't?
Like,
and that's
yeah.
Then why is everybody getting such a flame?
You know what? John Champion and I had, well, he talked, I listened.
I listened to that today. That was great. Great interview.
John Champion brought up, I interviewed John Champion and Ken Ray from the Mission Log podcast and just put it out on the Simply Syndicate, on the Starbase feed. And John was talking about how, you know, especially because what they're doing with their show is analyzing every episode, not reviewing it so much as just looking for the morals, meanings, and messages and talking about how each show was made.
Yeah.
And when you're that deep into the mechanics of how a TV show is made, and you see how many people are involved and all the different writers and all the different producers and all of the, you know, my favorite thing that John said was, you know, when you're watching a show, how long does it take the turbo lift to get from point A to point B? And the answer always is however long it takes to get the dialogue you need done.
Exactly.
Right.
So canon is fine. There are, you know, canon, you know, every show has a Bible that explains what, you know, what the boundaries are for the most part. But canon is and continuity are almost a byproduct. They're almost, when it does work, it's great. But to expect it is kind of unreasonable.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to get slapped across the face with things. You don't want a character suddenly being able to do something that they couldn't do before. You know, I don't want Deanna Troy to all of a sudden she can shoot lasers out of her eyes. And we've never seen that before. Like, what? She can do
that? That would have been cool, actually.
You know, like, oh, yeah, you remember I have that power. I can shoot lasers out of my eyes. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You know, all Betazoids can do that.
Yeah.
Didn't you know that? But okay, so let's talk about the big deal that everybody is complaining about, and the fact that in the United States we have to pay extra to watch the show, And in other countries, if you have Netflix, you'll get it automatically. And we've talked about that a few times on Cosmic Potato. Folks, if you don't know, we're on another show called Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast that John and I host together, and Rick is on very often. And we've talked about this a couple of times. The thing with this subscription service is that it's in the infancy of a system that's probably going to eventually become the norm for this kind of entertainment. I mean, we've watched TV over the air and cable and satellite for years, but now that there's so many other ways to see things, you know, some people watch stuff on TV, some people watch it on their phone or on a tablet or something like that, that I think that eventually everything's going to be streaming. So, but we're in the infancy of that. So we're at a point where every network is wanting to have their own streaming service, and they're going to put this out here, and they're going to charge you $6 or $7 a month to watch this, programming. I don't think it's always going to be like that. But it's obviously, it's got to start from somewhere. And the thing is, it's $7 a month if you want to watch it with commercials. If you want to watch it without commercials, it's $10 a month. And $6 is like lunch one day, you know, yeah. or a cup of coffee a few times a month or something like that, you know. So the thing about Netflix, the reason that Netflix is carrying it in other countries is because Netflix paid for it. You know, they put out, hey, who wants to carry this show in other countries? Because CBS All Access is not in other countries yet. It's still a relatively young service. So Netflix is like, we'll carry it, and we'll pay you this amount of money. Well, that amount of money is enough to pay for the entire Star Trek show. You know, so anything that they make beyond that is all profit. You know?
Yeah.
So.
You know, when I first heard that they were going to be doing this, I was not in the least bit surprised.
Yeah.
Ever since the earliest shows of Starbase 66, we've been talking about how this is kind of what we've been wanting forever.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have you looked at your cable TV subscription and went, wow, there's 300 channels. I watch those four.
Yeah. I wish I could pay for those four. Yeah.
Yeah. We've always wanted a la carte television. And now we're getting it, and people are bitching.
Yeah, because they want to pay that same bill, or they want to pay a cheaper bill and just go in and say, "Hey, just give me these channels." They don't want to go to the different websites and subscribe to all this stuff.
Well, it's because, you know, people don't mind something if they never had it, but people have always had CBS for free.
Yeah,
so it feels like something that they used to get for free they now have to pay for. That's why it hurts. That's why they're complaining.
Well,
if it was just some new streaming service, like, hey, we're starting a channel, you know, Bobo Plug, you know,
Bobo I'd Blug. Subscribe to Bobo Blood.
Yeah, that's what Hulu is. Hulu's like, hey, we're going to show you a bunch of shows. You should subscribe to us, and then everybody did because it was a new thing, but.
And yes. Then you still got commercials, which pisses me off to no end. But
yeah, I'm like, that's why I pay for Prime. Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, and the analogy that I've used several times talking about this show is that, okay, I'm a Star Trek fan. I've been a Star Trek fan since I was probably about 10 years old. I love Star Trek, and I have paid for VHS tapes. I have paid for DVDs. I have paid for novels. I went
movie tickets.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I went to see Star Trek Beyond. It was last summer, right? I went to see Star Trek Beyond, and I took my wife. I took both my kids. And I think my son's girlfriend went with us, and I bought.
That's a chunk of change.
Yeah, I bought tickets to the movie. They were 3D tickets. They were on the IMAX. They were on the IMAX screen.
Was it somebody's birthday?
It was probably my birthday.
You're doing birthdays wrong.
Dads get the honor of spending their own money on their birthday. so it was 3D, it was IMAX, and then we go inside and we buy popcorn and we buy drinks and probably a box of candy or something like that. So by the time we sat in the theater seats, we had probably spent about $70, maybe more. I don't know.
I was going to say, did they have Lone Rangers in the lobby there?
And
a payment plan.
And it was just, you know, but it was a Star Trek movie, and I was going to get to see a new basically a new episode of Star Trek, and I was willing to shell out all this money. And paying $6 a month for the next 3 or 4 months so I can see 15 episodes is not that big a deal to me.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Right.
That's the thing. If this was like, you know, if like Showtime or Stars or something where they were charging 16, 17, 18 bucks a month or whatever, then I could see all of the complaining. But we're talking $7. Skip Starbucks once and you're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And and they give you the first week for free. So
yeah.
If you wanted to, you could wait until the entire first season is already out. And then you could just get your free week, watch the show. If you like it, the next season you'll know, hey, I'm going to subscribe and I'm going to watch it as it comes out or whatever. If I mean,
now they are trying to kind of buffer against that sort of thing by releasing them once a week. And there's going to be that mid-season hiatus.
Yeah.
Which that kind of cheeses me off. And but that's something all TV shows are doing now.
Well,
I hate it with flames.
Yeah.
But it's a part of life now, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, anymore. And one of the reasons that they do that is that the last episode of the first part comes out on November the 5th. So they're trying to keep from having new episodes come out over the holidays because that's when a lot of people aren't watching as much, you know. There's a lot going on, a lot of traveling going on, a lot of parties and stuff like that. So, you know, put it on pause, come back in January, watch the rest of the season. So
yeah.
I'm okay with that, you know. And we're going to do the same thing for this podcast. We're gonna take a break.
You know, it was funny. When they first announced that there was going to be a Star Trek show back in whatever, my initial thought was, yeah, we've heard this before. Because we had, you know, it seemed like every other year there was like so-and-so is pitching another idea to CBS or Paramount, and it just never went anywhere. And then when there was like, oh, this is really happening, and then they said, but it's going to be CBS All Access, $6.99 a month. I was like, all right. So that night at dinner, I said, hey, honey, there's a new Star Trek show going to be coming out. Oh, really? Cool. Yeah, it's going to cost $6.99 a month. And she goes, oh, that's too bad. and I said, you know, I don't make many unilateral decisions in this house, but I'm paying to watch Star Trek.
Okay, so James McNulty was another one that commented, and he said nobody trusts CBS to do Trek correctly anymore. And he bases that off of Star Trek Into Darkness. So I have a rebuttal for that as well. Star Trek Into Darkness was not made by CBS. Star Trek Into Darkness was made by Paramount. So the thing that a lot of fans don't understand is that CBS runs Trek on TV. Paramount runs Trek on the movies. And that's the reason why J.J. Abrams pulled out of Star Trek after the first movie. Because when he signed on, what he was planning to do was create this universe where he could have movies come out, he could have a TV show, he could have animated series and comics and novels, and they'd all take place in his universe that he's creating. But then once he got in and started making the movie, I think the other shoe was dropped. Well, you can't put anything on TV unless CBS signs off on it. And CBS is like, no, because we're gonna do our own thing sometime in the future. So he left Star Trek and went to Star Wars, in which they're kind of starting to let him do a little bit of what he was wanting to do over there. So you have to understand, CBS didn't really have anything to do with Star Trek Into Darkness. So if you don't like that movie, don't blame CBS. That was all Paramount and Abrams. Yeah, there was a lot of what I've seen over the last year. People, they're just upset. So, you know.
But there's nothing to be upset about.
I know. It's a TV show.
They're just scared. They're just scared. It's okay. Guys, it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be all right. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, guys. It's going to be all right.
Come on, James. You and me. Lurpas at noon. Let's do it.
That is the complete opposite message.
Set your phasers to stun.
You're John's helping. The good cop. I'm the bad cop. You're the bad cop.
Yeah. There you go.
Come on, Patak. Let's go.
Anyway. Wow. Hey. Hey, guy. Yeah. Come on, champ. Let's not.
Dun, 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 dun,
there you go. Yeah. Da,
da, da, da. Happy place. Going to the happy place.
Before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about some of the characters and the actors that are going to be on the show, and see if we know them from other places. A lot of them I've never heard of before, but we'll talk a little bit about that. Of course, Sonequa Martin-Green is playing Michael Burnham. She's a human. She's the lieutenant command. She's a lieutenant commander, and she's the first officer of the USS Shenzhou, NCC 1227. And she's the first human to attend the Vulcan Learning Center as a child and the Vulcan Science Academy as a young woman. She's worked under Captain Philippa. Is it Georgiou? Is that how you pronounce her name?
Georgiou.
Okay.
Yeah, or something like that.
She's been under her for the last 7 years.
I watched a lot of YouTube last night. Georgiou.
Like I said before, her parents were killed during a Klingon attack while she was at the Vulcan Academy. And her adoptive parents are Sarek and Amanda Grace. She's the adoptive sister to Spock. Okay, I'm sorry. And she's a xenoanthropologist.
Don't talk with my canon, pal.
She's a xenoanthropologist and inherently a first contact specialist. So,
the whole Klingon War thing is not going to look good on her resume.
she is the main character of the series, and this is the first series where the main character was not the captain of the ship or the commander of the space station or what have you. So it'll be interesting to see how they, and like I said, this is not the first show in modern times that does that kind of thing. Because if you look at TV shows like Grey's Anatomy and some of the cop shows and stuff like that, the main character is not the head of the hospital. You know, the main character is one of the surgeons, you know, so they're kind of doing what other shows are what we're used to seeing on other shows. Then you've got Michelle Yeoh as Captain Georgiou. She's a human, and she's the commanding officer of the Shenzhou. She is a war veteran, and we have also seen her in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Tomorrow Never Dies, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I don't know who she played in that, but
she was one of the they're not Reavers. What was the blue dudes? Peep tribe, whatever the at the end of the movie. Well,
yeah. Oh yeah,
at the
end
of the movie when is it John Travolta? No. Oh, Sylvester Stallone. Why did I get that?
Travolta.
I don't know what my brain did with that one. those people. She was one of them.
Okay.
She was the head of one of the factions at the end there when they did the funeral for Mary Poppins.
She also played the goat in Kung Fu Panda 2.
Okay, which is a lot of people don't realize is better than Star Wars. You said Kung Fu Panda was better than Star Wars.
Kung Fu Panda 1.
Okay.
Ah, okay.
straight.
Doug Jones plays Saru, who is a Kelpian.
Yes.
And he is a lieutenant and the science officer of the Shenzhou. He is the first Kelpian in Starfleet. They are a prey species, so he comes from a planet where there is a predator that kills and eats his people. I guess he has heightened survival instincts. He has hooves for feet, and his anatomy he has a threat ganglia, and it goes off. I do too. I have a threat ganglia, and it goes off.
Threat ganglia. Leo shrinks when I'm scared.
Yeah. He has a threat ganglia that goes off when a threat is unseen. And we've seen him in Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy 1 and 2, and Adaptation.
That's right. He's the dude with the eyes in his hands in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. He what's the name of that show? Falling Skies.
He was Oh, John, I think your microphone is on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
did ninjas just attack?
Yeah. Your voice just kept getting further and further away, and you were still talking. Anthony Rapp.
Yeah, my phone just fell. Should I repeat that? No. Okay.
Anthony Rapp plays Paul Stamets, and he is also a human. He is a lieutenant and a science officer on the Discovery. His character is openly gay. His love interest is Dr. Hugh Culber, who we'll discuss in just a second. We have also seen that actor in A Beautiful Mind, Rent, Dazed and Confused, and Road Trip. So I think he was mainly background characters in most of that. I think this is his first starring role. So one thing that I wanted when I heard that they were going to have an openly gay character on Star Trek, you know, no big deal. I don't want him to just be there just to be there. You know what I'm saying? I don't want it to just be the token gay guy, you know. There's no reason for, I mean, unless he has storylines that are related to his personal life or whatever, it's kind of like in Sulu in Star Trek Beyond, you know. There's no reason for them to harp on it, you know. We just see him kind of put his arms around his husband and walk away, you know. No big deal. You know, I just don't want it to be something that it's like a sideshow or something. They're just doing it just to be doing it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I can assure you that every LGBTQA Star Trek fan feels exactly, well, maybe not every one of them, but most people in the LGBTQ community feel the same way.
Yeah.
They are very excited that there's going to be an openly gay character in the show.
Two.
And waiting to see how it's handled.
Yeah.
We talked about this a lot. Well, we've talked about this subject a lot. We did a show or two about it on the Starbase where it was like, where, you know, we talked about how there needs to be representation, but it needs to be done properly. It needs to be, you know, the characters need to be as real and as human or whatever species they are as every other character, and not just, you know,
their orientation should not be their defining characteristic.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They should be a character who happens to be gay, not the gay character.
Yeah.
So we'll see how they handle
it. Yeah,
that.
There's no reason for him not to be there, you know, because, you know, obviously with a crew of so many people, there's going to be a few homosexuals on the ship, but
it's the future and it did in fact get better.
And we've also talked about how on many different shows about how Star Trek has really dropped the ball in this area. You know, with the exception of the Outcast on TNG, which was clumsy at best. They really have not addressed any sort of alternate sexuality issues in the show.
Yeah, they tried. And they tried to on Deep Space Nine, and it really got, I don't know, it got a lot of backlash. I remember it getting a lot of backlash. I was a teenager at the time, but there was that episode where Jadzia's former partner came to the station.
Yeah, but even that, while that was better.
Yeah,
it was still, they were two beings who had a heterosexual relationship in a previous incarnation coming together, who both, and then they happened to be in the same gender bodies. It just, there's always some out.
Yeah.
I could be remembering this wrong. I probably am, because I'm not the, probably shouldn't admit this on this show, but I'm not the Star Trek guy of the three of us. But I could have sworn, And I want to say it was Deep Space Nine, but there was like some threat to Earth, and the president of Earth, or whatever it was called, effectively the president of Earth was not human and was also gay. I could have sworn I remember that. I'll look it up, and I'm sure, you know, everyone online will correct me.
Now the president,
that's not Star Trek.
Yeah, the president of the Federation in Star Trek VI wasn't human, but I don't remember him being gay.
Well, like I said, I could be remembering it wrong, or I could be a genius, and I'm the only one to remember it right. But I will look it up for confirmation. But to the larger point of Lieutenant Stamets' character, I got, and again, this is over the course of the interviews that I binged last night. He's like, I can't remember the technical name for it, but his field of study is like fungus and microbes or something.
Mycologist.
Oh yeah, mycologist with a Y. That makes sense. The more you know. And apparently, his work is going to have some major effect on like the goings on of the course of the storyline. So,
because he's a fun guy.
There you go.
Good night, everyone.
Tip your waiters.
We've also got Wilson Cruz, who plays Hugh Culber, who is also a human. He's the medical officer on the Discovery. He's also openly gay, and we've seen him before on My So-Called Life. But that was a long time ago, and he was a teenager. I remember that show. John, did you watch that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, My So-Called Life with Claire Danes. Not. Claire Danes was the lead character on that show, and he played her gay best friend in that show, which was one of the first openly gay characters on television that I remember, because it was early 90s when that happened.
Yeah, I've forgotten. I knew that I had seen him somewhere before, and I couldn't remember where until you just said that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Then you got Terry Serpico as Admiral Anderson, who is a human, and he's a high-ranking Starfleet official. We've seen him on Army Wives, The Purge, and Michael Clayton. Some of these names I can't pronounce. Not very well, anyway. Malik Panchali. He plays a character by the name of Nambu, who is a human. He is the chief medical officer of the Shenzhou. We've seen him on 30 Rock, Weeds, and he did a voice in Phineas and Ferb. Sam Vartholomeos as Danby Connor, who is also a human. He's an ensign at Starfleet Academy and a junior officer on the Shenzhou. He plays on the TV show Bull right now. Of course, we got Jason Isaacs as Gabriel Lorca, who is captain of the Discovery. He's considered to be a brilliant military tactician, and we've seen him in Harry Potter, The Patriot, and The OA.
Weird not seeing him with long blonde hair.
Yeah, true. Mary Wiseman as Sylvia Tilly. She's a human, and she's a cadet on board the Discovery. She's in her final year at Starfleet Academy. She is Michael Burnham's roommate. She works in engineering. We've seen her on Longmire and Baskets. Shahzad Latif as Ash Tyler, who is a human, and he is a lieutenant and security officer. And he was originally cast to play Kol, who is a Klingon, but he got this part instead. He is a former prisoner of war. He was locked in a prison with Gabriel Lorca and Harry Mudd. So we kind of get an idea of where Harry Mudd is coming from.
Wow.
In this series, he was also in the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, and he played on Penny Dreadful. He played Henry Jekyll on Penny Dreadful.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Rekha Sharman as Landry, and it says that she is likely human. They're not exactly sure. She may be the security chief, and she was in the Corps. She was in Alien vs. Predator Requiem, and she played on Battlestar Galactica, but I'm not sure who she played.
She was one of the final five. Oh, sorry.
We're not spoiling that show.
Oh.
She was also on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
And she was in Star Trek Continues.
And I want to say the 100. Like she's sci-fi certified.
She's been around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Emily.
And she's so cute.
Oh yeah.
Emily Coots as Kayla Detmer, who is also a human. She is a helmswoman, I'm assuming, on the Discovery. James Frayne plays Sarek, who is a Vulcan. He is the Vulcan ambassador to the United Federation of Planets. He is part of the Vulcan High Command, the father of Spock, and the adoptive father of Michael Burnham. What in the world are you doing to your microphone?
Sorry.
He's also been in Tron Legacy, Orphan Black, Gotham, and Agent Carter. So we've seen him in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I remember him showing up a lot as the bad guy. So it's interesting that he's not playing the bad guy this time. As far as I know, they're not making Sarek a bad guy. That would be weird.
That would be weird, yeah.
Chris Obi is playing T'Kuvma, who is a Klingon. He's the leader of the Klingon Empire. He desires to unite the 24 great Klingon houses and to halt the encroachment of others. Elaborate clothing honors He has elaborate clothing and he honors ancient Klingon ways and the path of honor set forth by Kalis the Unforgettable. He calls himself the second...
I'm a trade man. I once traded one... What was that?
You know what? I'm just going to step away from my computer.
He calls himself the second coming of Kalis. So I'm assuming that he thinks that he's like the reincarnation of Kalis or something like that.
Kalis promised he would return.
Yeah. He was in American Gods. He was in Ghost in the Shell and Snow White and the Huntsman.
Who was he in American Gods?
I don't know. I had looked it up, but I don't have it in front of me now.
Which one?
His name is Chris Obi. Oh, I know who he plays. He plays the death guy, the guy that ushers people over to the other side.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh. He plays Osiris.
Oh, Osiris. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's that guy.
Mr. Ibis.
Of course, he won't look like that in this. He'll look like a Klingon in this. So, Kenneth Mitchell as Kahl, who is a Klingon. He's a commanding Klingon officer, so he's like the first officer. Leader of the Klingon House of Kor. He is an alpha amongst Klingon leaders, and we've seen him in Jericho and the Astronaut Wives Club and Switched at Birth.
House of Kor?
The House of Kor, K-O-R.
Wow, that'll be interesting.
Is that a house that we've heard of before?
Oh, yes. Kor was the very first Klingon we ever saw in TOS. He was played by John Colicos. Oh,
okay, that didn't stand out
to me. Who then returned in Deep Space Nine.
Ah.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he's not playing that character. He's a member of that same house. So, yeah. Kenneth Mitchell as Kahl. He's also a commanding Klingon officer. Wait a minute. No, that's the one I just said. Sorry.
Yeah.
Mary Chifo as Laurel, Klingon battle deck commander. She belongs to two houses. Her father was from House T'Kuvma, and her mother was from House Mokai. She was in a movie called Shelby's Vacation, but I've never seen it, never heard of it.
I think she's in a relationship with Cole.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. Claire McConnell as Danas, who is a Klingon leader, and she's not been in anything that I've heard of. Damon Runyon as a character that I'm not even going to try to pronounce.
That's not the Damon Runyon, for those of you who may be literarily inclined.
No, he was the only thing that I've seen that I've seen that he was in was Cheaper by the Dozen 2, and he was probably a child when he was in it. So, Rainn Wilson is playing Harry Mudd, who is a scoundrel and a con artist. And of course, we've seen Harry Mudd in two episodes of the original series, and I think he was on the animated series as well, right?
Yeah, the animated series was kind of a retread of his first one in TOS about using drugs. I have very mixed feelings about Harry Mudd being in this. It really reeks of fan service. It better be handled well. This is one of the few things about the show that I'm somewhat reticent
about.
Well,
I'll tell you, they got the right guy to play the part, because I think Rainn Wilson could play Harry Mudd very well. I really think he could. So
here's something. Let me just this. I am not gonna like speak in favor of like catering necessarily to the audience. If you're only telling the story that you're telling because you think it's gonna get good ratings as opposed to it being a good story that you want to tell. No, don't do it. But to me, fan service in itself is not inherently bad.
Yeah.
I feel like that is part of your job. You know, if you're, especially if you're coming into a franchise, you know, a lot of the times people complain about, you know, the new Star Wars or the new Star Trek or whatever, is because it didn't touch on these things. It didn't give the fans what they wanted. Like, it's an impossible situation.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So fan service as just like, I feel like there's a huge negative connotation to it, and it really shouldn't be. I mean, obviously everything in moderation, but something done just because the fans will like it, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. If it sucks, or if it doesn't make sense in the context, then yeah, but I mean, that's kind of your job, is to do stuff that the fans will like, and you know, and tell a good story while you do it.
Well, that's why I'm withholding judgment until I see how they handle it. But this and the announcement that there are going to be tribbles in the show.
I have, yeah, I haven't heard worried. That. Yeah, I haven't heard that.
I've seen the tribble.
And my only problem with Harry Mudd being in it is, at the time that the Enterprise encountered Harry Mudd for the first time, he was a second-rate con man that no one had heard of.
Well, and the
he may very well be that same thing at the end of this series, and I'll be like, okay, fine. But if he's a major player in a major turning point of the Federation history, that will be hard to swallow.
Right. I don't think that's the case, because, you know, according to Sean's research, which I'm inclined to believe, he was like held in a cell with these, you know, with one of the major characters on the show. So that's his end for the show. And it, you know, he's a petty criminal at that point, and that gives him a connection to Discovery, which is really just all you need. So yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
There's
no
reason why anybody on the Enterprise would have heard of him.
Yeah, and he's not in the entire season. I think he's only in two episodes, from what I've heard.
Okay.
So
and you know, again, I'm not saying this is in any way a deal breaker for me. It's just one of the very few things I've seen about the show that has me slightly concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out a couple of predictions and see if you guys have any predictions before we end. I think that Captain Lorca, I don't think he's going to die, but I do think he's going to become I think he's going to become somehow incapacitated or MIA, and it's going to cause Michael to have to take over command. By the way, I tried to do some research. Has anybody seen any stories that explain why they named her character Michael? Because Michael is usually a male name.
They just did it.
Just because.
In terms of the context of the show, I don't know. But, like, the writers, I think one of the writers, just anecdotally was at a party or something, and he was introduced to a woman whose name was Michael, and he thought it was cool.
Because when the first time I saw it, you know, months and months ago, that's a misprint. They meant to write Michelle.
Yeah, that was funny. I was watching a lot of YouTube, and like some of the early predictors just corrected it.
Yeah.
they're calling her Michelle during their whole thing. It's like, here's what we know.
Yeah.
Michelle Burnham.
Yeah.
Do either of you kids remember a show called The Waltons?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. The woman who played Mama Walton, her name was Michael Leonard.
I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Learned.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is not without precedent.
Yeah. I've met women named Sean before, so.
Yeah.
So, and the other prediction I had is that I think that this season may end with, I mean, of course, the season is going to end with the story arc for that season coming to a close, but I think that Michael Burnham is going to make some kind of a decision that may put her career at risk, and that may be where the next season picks up. And it may even take place a couple of years later. Maybe they'll jump forward in time a couple of years. So Rick's laughing.
I'm laughing just because every single Star Trek character at some point makes a decision that could put their career at risk.
Yeah.
So this isn't a big limb you're going out on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but we may see, you know, like maybe this season will end and then next season will pick up and it's like 3 years later or something like that. So
obviously the show hasn't aired yet, so nothing I say is really a spoiler. But I given the way that some of the actors have talked about what's going to happen, it kind of seems like she's kind of responsible for setting off the war.
Like, yeah, possibly.
Like not.
She may
not
become a war prisoner.
Not on her own, yeah. Obviously, but it's kind of. I kind of get the sense that it's a kind of a deep cut, but the Babylon 5 situation with Delenn, where a hasty decision or just kind of in the moment things kind of you know the thing can go one or two ways and you pick the wrong one and things go real bad. I kind of get the sense that that's how it's going to go down.
Yeah. Rick, do you have any predictions?
I have none.
Okay.
I'm
just gonna take it as it comes. Yeah.
Well, blissfully ignorant. Well, here's the thing. You know, as a podcaster on this network, and as, you know, the host and creator of Starbase 66, I have a certain responsibility to know what's going on and to bring that information to the listeners. And that's something I take very seriously. I expose myself to far more spoilers along because of that than I normally would. However, I've kind of reached my line with that for this show because it's Star Trek, and we haven't had the pleasure of new Star Trek on television for 15 years. And I don't have anything else to bring to the table right now, because I want to be able to enjoy this at least at the beginning. You know, yeah. Once the show started, then I may just dive headfirst into all of the stuff. But I want to go into this show as fresh as I can and as blank as I can, because, you know, there was a video that was released earlier this week. It was probably 2 weeks ago. Now I think about it, because I keep forgetting I went a week without power and didn't see anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they released a bit of the theme music, and it showed the composer working on the theme music and then playing the theme music for Discovery. And it's amazing.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's really, really nice.
But it ends with dun, 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 and I got chills.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to experience this. I want to go into this as fresh faced as I can at my age for anything. and just experience it as new as possible. And then, you know, once we're a couple episodes in, then yeah, I'll be tearing into it. But right now Star Trek is coming back, and I could not be happier about that, because, you know, we've had movies for a while, but that's, you know, essentially one episode every 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years, depending on who's in the director's chair. Now we're going to get Star Trek every week for a year.
Yeah.
And I just want to enjoy that right now.
Well, the one thing that I want to stress to the audience is that if you watch the series on the Sunday and you like it, go on social media and let people know that it's a good show, you know,
yeah.
so that people will watch it, tweet about it, do whatever you can to get positive information out there, because there's a lot of negative information out there already. But this is a brand new Star Trek series. We haven't had this since 2005. They're already doing some talks about doing a mini series based on Khan. If this is successful, we could possibly be looking at CBS creating Trek on TV the way Disney is doing for Star Wars and Marvel on the big screen, where we've got multiple series and we've got standalone films and all that, and mini series and stuff like that. So that I think that would be fantastic. But in order for that to happen, you have to show them your support. And I just turned this podcast into an NPR telethon. So only you can make a difference. Call now. You'll get a free mug and a tote bag. So anyway, I think this is a great spot for us to stop. So remember,
don't call. I don't have any tote bags.
This was a preview episode, and we will be recording another episode on Monday night. It'll come out probably Tuesday night. That'll cover the first two episodes, because just to let listeners know, in case you don't, the first episode of Discovery will air on Sunday, September 24th on CBS on television. Immediately after that show is over, the second episode will be released on CBS All Access. Now, if you're not near a TV when it's on, they'll release both of them at the same time on CBS All Access, so you'll be able to watch them both. So our episode that you'll hear next week, we will be talking about both of those episodes. We have a Facebook page. Just search for Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. You should find it, and there will be links to the episode, to the podcast episode when we post it. And if you don't want to sit down and write us a message, we'd love to get messages on Facebook from you. If you don't want to send us a message, you can leave us a voicemail, and I'll play them on the show. If you want to call and leave us a message, you can call us at area code 205-642-8380. And I'm going to put that on the Facebook page so that you'll know it. I'll repeat it. It's area code 205 642-8380. You can leave us a voicemail. I'll play them here. Your long distance rates may apply. iTunes is another great place to find the show. If you would, please leave us a 5-star review so that we can help more people find the show. 5-star reviews are the best. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. At the end of this season, when season one is over in February or March, I'm going to take the name of everybody that leaves us a 5-star review on iTunes. I'm going to draw one of those names, and I'm going to give you a prize. And I'm not 100% sure what the prize will be. It'll probably be the first novel based on Discovery that's coming out. It comes out next week, and it's written by David Mack. It's called Desperate Hours. If you leave us a 5-star review, I'll put your name in for that drawing. So the very best place to find us will be over at simplysyndicated.com. And while you're there, check out all the other podcasts available on the network, and you can sign up for Simply Everything. If you want to hear everything in their back catalog, they've been around for a long time, so there's a lot to listen to there. And Rick, you have another show or shows here on the network, right?
Well, I've got Starbase 66, the international Star Trek and genre fiction podcast that has been revived, and we'll be recording another episode tomorrow night, actually. I've got The Seventh Chevron, which is Rochelle Montanona from the Atomic Trivia War 9000 and I are watching Stargate SG-1 episode by episode and going through it. The Star Trek movie news. Not the Star Trek movie news. Simply Syndicated Movie News with Richard Smith and Jen Allen and Boz and myself and occasional others. So I'm on pretty much everything right now.
if you want to find the other show that John and I do together and Rick is on all the time, it's called Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast. It's over at cosmicpotato.com. I also do the Prime Direction, which is a show that I do where I interview Star Trek fans about their fandom. So you can go and check those out. And have I covered everything?
Just to clarify, the Cosmic Potato is a show that Sean and I do that Rick is almost always on. This show is a show that Sean and Rick will do that I will almost always be on. So yeah. Basically, I know it sounds the same. I know it's the same three people. But on the other show, I'm more in charge than Rick.
I am in charge of squat.
I just want to make that clear. If you like me better, then Cosmic Potato. If you like Rick better, then Star Trek After Show.
The just to let people know, this show we're gonna have a guest host on every week after this week. Next week, at least I've got him scheduled to be on. Next week, Scott Madison is going to be on, who you've heard on the Movie News show and several other shows, and every week after that, I've got somebody coming on. People that you may have heard on Cosmic Potato before. I've got Christopher DeFilippis and Skipper Martin. They're going to be on, and so I'm looking forward to having those
and
people.
Richard Smith at some point.
Richard Smith at some point. Hey, we're going to have to record a little earlier if he's going to join us, though, because when we started, it's like 2:30 in the morning for him, so he couldn't make it.
Yeah. Which, so. for Rich, it's not that he's asleep at that point. It's just he has to take Allison to work in an hour, so he wouldn't have time to do the show.
Yeah.
Because Rich is a vampire. He doesn't sleep during the night.
Okay, John. Thanks for being here.
Sure, man.
The shuttle bay doors are always open.
That's not a good policy.
That's true. Rick, it's always a pleasure talking Trek with you.
And I have a haiku for tonight. No, I don't.
Oh, man.
Thank you. It's fun, and I'm looking forward to talking about the show for reals in another week, so yay.
All right, and we're signing off, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us for Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. Your feedback is welcome. Leave us a comment and review on iTunes, or follow us on Facebook. The views and opinions stated on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of Simply Syndicated, CBS, Paramount Pictures, or their sponsors. Star Trek Discovery is owned by CBS and has no affiliation with Simply Syndicated or this podcast. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next week as we analyze another episode of Star Trek Discovery here on Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show.
So it's official. I have now watched the second episode of The Orville and I'm done with it.
Oh, you don't like it?
It's not even that I don't like it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's its big sin is I don't give a rat's ass about anyone on that ship.
I like it enough to keep watching. I've got a 3-episode rule. I'll probably give it more than that, because they're trying to do. I'm giving them points for degree of difficulty.
Except that it's not an homage. It's a complete freaking ripoff of Star Trek, and it's not in it's not in any way funny.
Yeah,
at least I'm not finding it funny at all, and the bickering is annoying. And this episode was a complete ripoff of a Twilight Zone episode and the freaking cage.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The first episode, I thought that the humor was that they were just kind of shoehorning the humor in there. You know, is like let's have a scene and let's just bring everything to a halt so we can tell a joke. You know, and the second episode, I thought that they blended that a little bit better, but it's still. I mean, it's just. It's just basically we're filling in all the, we're checking off all the boxes to make this, you know, the next generation. And yeah,
the reason that I liked the second episode better was, yeah, the whole bickering exes thing, you know, that's okay, whatever. But the crewman who had sit on his egg, I think it was interesting.
That was weird.
I liked it. Yeah. And the whatever she is, like the ensign who wasn't sure of herself. Okay, yeah, it's a hackneyed plot. But it was, I liked that the quote unquote main story was like, you know, the tertiary story. And yeah, they were stuck in the zoo and that was kind of the main plot, but the show didn't really focus on them that much.
Yeah, they made that the B plot, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it was more about the lieutenant or whatever she is.
Yeah.
And again, it's not like that was a great story, but I appreciated that they were trying to. Again, when I say they have a higher degree of difficulty, I mean they're trying to blend the sci-fi with the dramatic, with the comedy, and that is a tough thing to do. And, you know, I can name on one hand the shows that did it well. So I'll this one's leaning more to the comedy than a lot of those shows did. So I'll give much. I'm not a huge Seth MacFarlane fan, but I'm with it for now. I'm with it for now.
Well, it's on Fox, so it's going to be canceled eventually. So.